you know, people get emotionally involved with what they own. And yeah, sometimes, especially with photography, because it's so subjective, and what might be just utter garbage to one person is the world to somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. It, you know, and I kind of got a taste for that. We'll get into it. But when there was one image that got sold, and I couldn't believe I didn't get the image, you know, I must have just missed it, you know, and I'd been searching for an image like this. I was upset. I'm still upset. You know? It's like, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, yeah, it's just, it's a weird connection.
When for a while I was collecting naval images specifically, and there was one CDV and I wanted it so damn bad. It was for sale at an auction. And I was actually in attendance. I was I was at the live sales floor, and they just like didn't see my hand when I was raising the paddle, and it was sold to somebody else. I was so upset. Oh, and sure enough, several months later, the same view came up on eBay and I was able to buy it. So, you know,
there you go. Yeah. But I probably would have been screaming, play back the tape, play back the tape. I raised my hand. Dang it.
I did. I got mad. I was like, hey, you missed me. Yeah.
Welcome to the Untold Civil War podcast. Glad to have you listening. Now that'll just give you a taste of what you're about to hear. Just a quick self-promotion. If you like what I'm doing here, but would like me to cover other parts of history, such as World War II, Vietnam, the American Revolution, pirates, then please check out The Tactical Historian. Exclusive to YouTube, you'll see interviews with a veteran from the French Foreign Legion, the last living coast watcher of World War II, and a bunch of other content in regards to collecting militaria. Don't miss out on this. Check out the link in the show notes. And now, lace up your brogans, pick up your musket, and let's march into some untold civil war.
I'm with Adam Fleischer. Adam Fleischer serves as president of Fleischer's Auctions, a leading purveyor of fine 19th century Americana, including Civil War relics. Adam has handled items that now reside in a number of preeminent institutions, including the Library of Congress, the Houston Museum of Fine Art, the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History, and many more. And he is also a contributing editor to Military Images Magazine, which happens to be a sponsor of this show. So, you know, I can go on and talk about how great Military Images Magazine, but real quick, can you give us a little bit of a testimony about Military Images Magazine?
Oh, it's it's my favorite magazine. And if you're interested in collecting Civil War portraits, or if you're just interested in the Civil War generally, you need to become a subscriber to Military Images. I never waste an opportunity to evangelize Military Images magazine. The publisher, Ron Coddington, who you've had on the podcast, is unbelievable at what he does. And it's really a first-rate magazine.
Oh, absolutely. I tell people all the time, if you have that Civil War buff in your family and you're just not sure what to get him because they have everything, you know, mm-hmm. If they don't have a subscription to this magazine, it's perfect for a Civil War buff because it's really light reading. You can pick it up, open it to any spot and, you know, just start reading. There's just so much stuff in there and so much to discover.
Well, and I won't waste this opportunity too to plug myself. So now I am a contributing editor to the magazine, but I also write a serialized column for Military Images called Behind the Backdrop. And in that column, I examine period backdrops that were used during the Civil War, which to many of your listeners may seem like a banal subject. But once you begin to collect portraits, it actually becomes very important to learn where these backdrops were located so that you can potentially identify subjects.
Right. It's part of the detective work that goes into identifying some of these unidentifiable or previously unidentified images, right?
Absolutely. And if you only know a few pieces of information about the soldier that's been photographed, if you see that he's wearing a cavalry jacket, if you see a regimental number on his cap, and then you're able to learn where the backdrop was located specifically, you may learn enough to definitively identify him. So it's worthwhile.
So you've been running these auctions. How did the sort of dealer bug catch you, if you will?
Well, I was always a bit of a collector at heart. I guess my first passion was collecting baseball cards. When I look back now, I think I really took to it in a serious way that was unlike a lot of my friends, whereas they were kind of passively interested in going to the baseball card shop, as we called it, and buying a pack of cards. I really wanted to complete every set. I wanted the 1998 Topps set complete. I wanted these specific rookie cards. I wanted it all. And when I laid in bed at night, all I could think about was the cards that I needed to acquire to complete my collecting goals. And so I guess I really always had the spirit of a collector. I guess a seminal moment when I look back to on how I became a dealer was I was taken to an auction when I was maybe 7 or 8 years old. Have you ever been to an auction before?
No, I have not. Not in person. Like online, I take part in the auctions, but not in person. Yeah.
Right. And I'm sure you've seen them depicted in the movies and TV, but it's really a very theatrical experience. There's somebody standing in the center going 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, sold, and somebody wins the item. And at 7 or 8 years old, to see this happen, I think I was just really captivated. Because I was always, and still am, a glutton for attention. And I liked the idea of this person standing in the center and being able to sell all the stuff. And it also, I think, intrigued me that when I looked around, this was like a proper estate sale, that everything I saw could be mine if I was just willing to pay the price. And if I recall correctly, the owner of the estate was an interesting person, and they had all sorts of different antiques that looked interesting to me. So that always stayed with me. And then later in high school, I began to go to antique shops and different garage sales and estate sales, and I began to purchase items with the aim of reselling them. And so I guess that's where it all started. And I just sort of took off from there. I guess specifically with the Civil War, my relationship with that material. I was always interested in American history. My first passion was the Revolutionary War. And I do remember, probably as a junior in high school, attending an estate sale in rural Ohio. And there was a tintype of three soldiers posed in front of a patriotic backdrop. I think I bought it for about $100. And what gave me the confidence to risk that amount when I wasn't earning much money at all? I didn't have anything. I don't know, but I must have realized that it was a good deal. I bought it, went on eBay that night and listed it for $275 or something like that. And it just immediately sold. And so I think a light bulb went off in my head. I go, oh, other people are interested in these.
Yeah.
And then really after that, I mean, that was the rabbit hole, so to speak. And that's what really got me looking for 19th century photographs. And I began to learn more about them and buy and sell them. And that led me to where I am today, I guess.
Has this interview got you excited about collecting Civil War images? Check out our newest sponsor, the Excelsior Brigade. I purchase their Civil War artifacts quite often. And let me tell you, the owners, Jim and Sheila, are great people. They conduct unparalleled research into their relics that they put up for sale. I actually acquired letters from them from a 79th New York Highlander on their website. And what amazed me even more than the quality of these items was that they had transcribed the documents for me. Check them out at the link in the show notes.
You talk about your appreciation for, you know, American history. And I think we mentioned a little bit before that you did collect for a short period naval images, right?
Right.
When did you get the realization? I mean, I hate to use Scarface as like a as a reference, but you know, where you never get high on your own supply. When did you realize that you had to make that separation where, okay, maybe I shouldn't be collecting so much and just focus on the dealing?
Well, I think really my problem was that I wasn't content with just having kind of a tiny collection that only I could enjoy. I guess I just have a type of personality where I wanted it to be the best, right? And to have the best collection, you have to spend thousands and thousands of dollars, millions of dollars even. And I think once I realized that it just wasn't feasible to be a collector and a serious collector and a serious dealer, especially when I was younger, I think that's when I fully transitioned to being a full-time dealer. And many people, I should say, many other dealers are sort of hybrids. They do maintain little collections for themselves, but usually they're very niche and esoteric. It's not as though they're trying to collect general fields of collecting.
When you talk about these images that you find and then sell, where do you find them? I mean, is there, I don't want you to give away all your secrets, but there's a place to look. I mean, how are these items found?
you know, I think eBay is a great resource, especially for the new collector too, because many people have experience with bidding through eBay anyway, so it's not as though that's a novel experience. And another great place to find images is at estate sales. I mean, that's really where I began. And estate sales are great because usually you can sort of figure out who the subjects were because of their relationship to the owner of the estate or who used to own the estate. And then at this point, 10 years on, I have a network of collectors and dealers who I'm aware of. And, you know, we like the haggle and deal all the time. So that's primarily where they're coming from. Oh, and I should say shows too, antique shows. There are four or five very large Civil War shows held throughout the year. And, you know, that's where you can pick up some great images.
Well, I'd like to talk about shows in a little bit here. Before we get that, maybe I'd like to just dig into the process itself. So once you go to an estate sale, find those items, how did those items then end up for sale? How does that work?
In estate sale, they're being sold with all the rest of the contents of the estate. So it's not as though they're being sold separately or described separately or, well, I mean, they're lotted separately, but it's not as though there's a separate sale specifically for the images. So you'd attend, wait for the images to come up for sale and bid, and then they're yours immediately.
And then you just resell them on your website or how does that
work? Oh, I see what you're asking. Yes, yes. At first, when I really didn't know too many collectors and I sort of was just first dipping my toe into the water of dealing, I did have a little website, and that was a great way to kind of make my items publicly available. And it was a great way to sort of meet people who were looking for Civil War images. But you can also sell them on eBay. You can send them to auction companies that specialize in 19th century Americana, or you can sell them privately if you're aware of somebody who might be interested. And I know that I listened to your podcast with Ron Connington, and I know that you've started to collect yourself recently. And so where are you primarily finding what you've decided to collect?
Mostly from dealers. I noticed that there's a lot of dealers out there. And of course, I've purchased one image from you.
Yes.
Which is great. But that it seems to me that there's plenty of places to look for images. One thing I would say too is, you know, not just the collecting side, we talked about how that's a great experience. But I think there's something to be said for when you finally sell that image or item to someone you know will enjoy it. I think there's a little bit of a high you get from that as well, right? Something enjoyable from that.
Absolutely. And you're making me think of three or four different things I could go on long tangents about. The first, I guess, is that there's a high in selling and there's also a high in buying. And I do wonder sometimes, and I have to confess, this may be true of even myself, if sometimes there's a bit of a gambling addiction to taking a risk. And if you see something's for sale, you're not necessarily certain that you can resell it for more, right? And so it's a gamble. And when the numbers get larger, it can be an incredible high. And I have found, and this is in one way that it's similar to a gambling addiction, is that I experience a little bit of an adrenaline rush or a high after I buy an image. But then I do kind of like feel low, like, oh gosh, now I've got this damn thing. Am I going to be able to sell it? And especially when I was younger and I was working with limited resources, it was like, well, that's all I've got. It's just me and this image now. I better be able to resell it. And then you experience that high again temporarily when you sell it for more, hopefully, at least. And then as for collecting, though, I think there are collectors who experience that high and are a bit addicted to, I mean, they don't have the aim to resell it, but they have that same gambling reflex where they see something that's for sale that they believe is probably more valuable than what it's listed at. And so they take a chance. And I think they experience a high in that moment as well.
Well, you mentioned kind of gambling and prices. Can you talk about some of the prices that you have seen over the years for different images? How high can these prices actually get?
Incredibly high. It's sort of interesting though, because it is all relative, right? Like trying to think of the most expensive 19th century photograph that's ever sold. Probably Billy the Kid. which sold for like $1.2 million. And there have been several other purported images that depict Billy the Kid, but I don't know how much they've sold for. In any case, the authentic one did sell for about $1.2 million. But then after that, there's a pretty steep dive. I mean, more recently, the photograph, CDV photograph of Harriet Tubman, I think sold for about $200,000, $150,000, $250,000, something like that. And there have been a handful of others sort of in that territory, which sounds like an awful lot of money, right? But it's all relative, because compared to the art market, I mean, those go for millions and millions of dollars. So it does beg the question, what's the difference? What's the difference between a print? This is, I can't even think of it a good example, because that's how, I don't know the art market, but let's say it's a print, a lithograph, right? Created by Chagall, maybe even after he's been dead. And, but it's, you know, very valuable, and it sells for millions of dollars sometimes, maybe not that specifically. This is a bad example, but the point is, what is the difference? And most people point to the fact that images just don't have wall power. They're not very big. And so they don't have, there's not a big wow factor when they're displayed. And, cased images were primarily created to be enjoyed intimately. You kind of cradle them in your hands, and you bring them up close, and you sort of get a sense of the person who's in the photograph. Whereas large prints that sell for millions of dollars are meant to be displayed, and they're meant to be shown off.
I'm sure this interview has you intrigued about studying Civil War portrait photography. The best resource for this is Military Images magazine. Keep an eye out for the spring and summer issues. You may see our podcast's ad in there. You might even see an interview with me in the summer edition. Subscribe to the magazine, link in the show notes.
Right, I think that's part of it, right? People like to show off the collection, or look, this is how much I spent and look what I got for it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I know what some of the Civil War images in my collection, as much as I love them, I'm so afraid to display them and have the sun or light ruin them, you know?
Right,
so I
end right.
up having them stowed away. You would never know that I had them until I break them out and show right. them, you know? So there's that factor. But, you know, now you start talking about those numbers. And I think those numbers kind of add to some of the drama that we were talking about a little bit before. So I think this is a nice segue. We both got to sit on a panel recently, and which was great. I had a lot of fun. It was really cool meeting everyone and kind of sharing images back and forth, talking about the different types of images that are out there. But I did notice that there was some tension in some of the, you know, questions and answers and stuff like this. Can we talk a little bit about that? You know, what is there really this high sort of drama slash tension that goes with collecting and dealing?
Well, sometimes. I have to preface this whole conversation by saying that I don't think that the Civil War collecting community is unique, and that it has big egos that occasionally butt heads. That is to say, I don't think that there's more drama in the Civil War collecting community than there is the Star Wars action figure collecting community, or and there's probably a whole lot less than in the art collecting community, just because the stakes are just a little bit lower. But at the end of the day, you know, occasionally a deal goes sour. Someone's upset about, you know, something they've purchased that maybe isn't quite what they thought it was initially. I can tell you, I'm relatively younger, and when I attend these shows, I do think to myself that the average age of a dealer that attends a lot of these antique shows is probably about like 60, 65. And they've been doing this for 30, 40 years, right? So imagine seeing the same group of people, I don't know, half a dozen times a year for 40 years, right? And all the while you're dealing, you're haggling, there's money involved. I think just statistically, you're going to have some issues. But for the most part, most people are very generous. They're very kind. They're more than willing to help if you have a question. And I certainly would tell any person who's interested in becoming a collector that they really have nothing to worry about.
How was it breaking into that community? I mean, they greeted you with open arms as someone new into the community, or how was it? Did it take you to have to prove yourself as an efficient dealer before they accepted you? How was that?
That's a great question. I think as a collector, yes, absolutely. They welcomed me with open arms. Anyone who displays an enthusiasm for the Civil War, I'm sure you've experienced this too. I mean, we're all a bunch of crazy people, really, right? It's just like, you know, if there's someone else that you think is like-minded, of course we're gonna, you know, I'm almost immediately good friends with them. And I know that if I have dinner with somebody who's interested in the Civil War, there won't be a second's pause in the conversation, because we're always gonna have something to talk about. Dealing, that's a little bit of a different story, because that community of people, while, and many have been very kind, but at the end of the day, it is a line of work, and there's competition. And I think that to some people, even though I've been doing this for a number of years now, I'm probably still the new guy. And that's, I'm sure, the case for other people who have been doing it for much longer than I have. I was lucky enough fairly early in my my professional career, to buy an item that sold for a tremendous amount of money at auction. And it was good for me in that I think it solidified my reputation as someone who knew what he was doing. So it was good in that respect. But then once people learn that you might have some money to spend, they're more willing to, it inspires envy, inspires jealousy. And so you have to sort of contend with all of that. So collecting community, absolutely lovely, very warm. But if you're interested in becoming a dealer, it's a little bit more steely.
I can imagine. But I've noticed that, you know, here and there, I've sold images back and forth, you know, just to raise money for this podcast, which has been kind of fun. You know, not that I'm going into dealing full time.
Sure.
very impressed with what you do, because it's not easy to sell items, for sure. One of the questions I had in regards to maybe some of the drama is, have you ever uncovered any fakes and had to deal with that sort of reality?
I haven't had anything come up where I uncovered a fake and it was previously believed to be genuine. And I guess by that, I mean, there are no notable examples that I can think of in my professional career. That being said, I see fake images, I see fake items all the time. And there's a spectrum of forgery, right? Like at its worst, or at their worst, they're created to deceive, and they're not period, and they're just completely illegitimate. And I guess the other side of the spectrum is that they might be period, but they have a manufactured provenance. And so navigating all of that can be difficult. I have had, you know, on many different occasions, I've been sent items where I have had to sort of gently let the seller or the collector know that what they have is not in fact genuine. So in that sense, I have uncovered fakes. Well, I can give you an example recently, and it's a bit embarrassing because it was a mistake that I made, but I was at a show in Tennessee, and I was buying a bunch of items from one dealer, and I was sort of making a pile for myself because the prices were cheap. And one of the items that I picked out was a staff and field officer sword. The price was just so cheap, I just didn't even take a second look at it. I just put it in my pile, right? Got home several days later, put it in my trunk, got home, and took the blade out of the scabbard and examined it a little bit close. And I was like, shit, this is, it's completely not real. It was a complete forgery, unfortunately. It was a modern production. And what made it sort of sinister is that there was sort of a fake patina applied to the blade to make it look as though it was period. So yeah, you have to be careful. And I think that when you're trying to authenticate an item, it is good to go to people who are knowledgeable about Civil War antiques. But a lot of times some of these questions are some items, their authenticity is, I don't know if subjective is the right word, but I guess it just depends on your standard of proof. I'd like to think that I have a fairly high standard by which I consider items authentic, but that doesn't necessarily mean that other people have the same standard.
So, you know, for a new collector like myself and others who are listening, what sort of advice could you give them, maybe in regards to looking out for fakes, but also just in general, what advice would you give?
I think I would tell any new collector to start out small. And even if they have deep pockets or they have some money to spend, to maybe start out buying less expensive items and then gradually build their collection to the point where they feel more confident to buy more expensive items. And again, it's important to note that even if they have the money to buy more expensive items, and even though the more expensive items are generally speaking more exciting, they should try and not let that tempt them and start out small. They have to pay their tuition, so to speak, and really learn about kind of the bread and butter items of the Civil War, swords, guns, basic portraits before they move on to more expensive items. And then I guess another piece of advice I would give is to join the collecting community. There are dozens of Facebook groups, people to get together at Civil War roundtables across the country. They attend shows. And like I've said previously, people are very generous with what they know. And the best way to learn about some of this stuff is from other people who have more experience.
Going off that, you know, talking about new collectors, one of the things I'm going to be doing in March is go to the Civil War Faces show.
Yes.
And this will be the first show I'll ever be attending. I don't know if any of the listeners will be attending it, but is there some etiquette? Is there some things to know when you go to a show for the first time that you should know when you attend one of these shows?
I think that's a great question. And by the way, I'll see you at the show, so it'll be nice to finally meet in person.
Yes, fantastic.
But that's a great question, and I wish I had asked someone before I attended my first show. Well, let's first kind of lay the scene. Okay, so this photo show, it's actually been moved recently. So it used to be at a hotel, and it's been moved to a different hotel, I think near the airport. And the show's going to likely be held in like a convention room, a conference room. And you'll enter the room where the show is being held, and there'll be a table where you can pay for admission. They'll stamp your hand and give you a ticket. And then you'll see rows of vendors, all of whom have a table in front of them. And because this is a photo show, of course, all they'll be selling for is photography. This is what I would say. Always request permission before you handle anything that's on someone's table. So even though many of the items will not be in cases and they won't be sort of, they'll sort of be within arm's reach, I would request permission before you actually handle them. If it's something you want to take a closer look at, just simply ask the dealer, do you mind if I take a quicker look? And they'll be more than happy to allow you to do so. So that's one piece of advice. Another piece of advice I would give is, and some people might disagree with this, but to not be afraid to make an offer. You never know what dealers have in any given item. You don't know how long they've had it. And if something's marked for sale at $250 and you're willing to give $150, just go for it. Ask them. Very few people are going to get upset. Now, some will. And it depends on the dealer and I guess how thick their skin is. But at least from my perspective, especially as a dealer, it actually confuses me that anyone would get upset, right? If I have something marked at $500 and somebody offers me $50, I'll just politely decline and say, no, thank you. That's a little bit lower than what I need for it. And so there may be some risk there, but I think that it's worth it personally. And when I first started collecting, I was never afraid to make an offer. But now that I've given you some advice as far as etiquette is concerned, I think now we should talk strategy. This is inside information, I think. Not really, but one thing that I would say is that if you're serious about collecting, you should probably attend during the dealer setup. So typically how these shows work is that the actual shows are held on Friday or on Saturday and Sunday. That's not how this show will be held, but that's a different story. Anyway, they're typically open to the public on Saturday and Sunday, and then Thursday or Friday is what's called dealer setup. Well, many people don't know that most times, even though it's called dealer setup, there you can gain admission if you pay a little bit of a premium. It's usually about $50 or $100. But all of the good stuff, as far as I'm concerned at least, is sold during that setup. And that's not to say you won't find something you've been looking for during the actual show. But if once you become a serious collector, you've got to just ante up and attend during the dealer setup. Another thing I would say too, and a very good friend of mine said this to me, and it's been great advice, is that when you're looking around the show, you're going to be very tempted to look down at items that are for sale on tables. But it's worth looking up occasionally and kind of seeing, praising the room and seeing where people are congregating. Because it's usually a sign that like a new dealer has come in that doesn't usually attend shows and he's got a bunch of stuff that people haven't seen. And sometimes it means there's some deals to be had. But I think you're going to have a great time.
Looking for the best gift for the Civil War buff in your family? Why not get them a Civil War ID disc from the Badge Maker? These unique, authentic gifts are perfect for any Civil War buff. And better yet, They are made right here in the USA. Link in the show notes.
And for the show, how much, like, would you say you bring cash, right? Obviously, you bring cash.
Oh, that's a great
question. How much do people usually bring, would you say?
It's a bit of a cash business, yeah. And we won't get into all the details as to why that is.
No. But you know,
older, and they want cash money. Oh, I'm glad you mentioned this, because occasionally, maybe you'll be in a position where someone demands that they be paid in cash, and so you do have to. If you're attending seriously, you probably should bring an amount of money that you're comfortable having in your pocket, and it's. It just depends on the collector. For some, that'll be $200. For others, it'll be $20,000. There was some guy, maybe I shouldn't even be saying this, but it's true. I don't think he does it anymore, would literally bring around a briefcase with just thousands and thousands of dollars in it and walk around like this was some sort of casino heist. And that's, to me, just sounds dangerous. But probably, you know, sometimes cash can grease the wheels of a deal, that's for sure. But this is what I wanted to say. So you may be put in the position where you want to buy an item, and you pull out your wallet and you begin to write a check, and the dealer goes, hey, wait a minute, I don't know you. Do you have somebody that'll vouch for you? This happens all the time. And so you kind of have to look around the room and go, well, that's my friend. He'll you know, vouch for my character. I'm no criminal. And then that person will have to come over. And if the dealer knows him, then maybe they'll be willing to take your check. But that does happen. And I'm more than happy to vouch for your checks if you need me.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for shedding a bunch of light on, you know, the behind the scenes, if you will, of dealing Civil War photography and Civil War relics. But real quick, where can people learn more about you, and where can they, you know, see the images that you are dealing?
Well, we are primarily selling via an online auction format now, and listeners can go to FleischersAuctions.com to see our sales. We just uploaded a catalog relatively recently, and there's going to be a sale this Saturday. And that's spelled FleischersAuctions auctions.com. And then they can follow us on Facebook, Fleischer's Auctions, and they can see our stuff there too.
Fantastic. And I'll put links in the show notes so everyone gets access to that, you know? So thank you so much for coming on the show, and hopefully we can do this again, maybe an after action report after the show itself in Virginia. So
perfect. I'm looking forward to seeing you. And then also next week, if you want to sit down for 10-15 minutes, whatever, and I can pull out some stuff in the office, I can show you what we have.
Absolutely, that would be great. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you. Take care.
Thank you for listening to that episode while you went for a jog, enjoying a Bloody Mary at brunch, pistol whipping a deserter, sneaking whiskey past the provost marshal, or whenever you listen to podcasts. Now, if you're interested in seeing more of Adam's wares, we have a video out on YouTube featuring some of the unique items he will be auctioning off very soon. While checking that out, check out the other unique video content that we have on our YouTube channel, including Civil War Mythbusting with Robert Girardi. Also, summer is coming, and it's time to resume campaigning. Hit the road, follow Civil War trails, and experience the most immersive Civil War road trip this summer. Link in the show notes. Thank you for listening, and I hope you tune in for the next one.